This is VK6ARN. News West is a WA-based club, and we continue to deliver news content to Sandgropers and beyond since 1931. Good morning, VK6 and other amateur and shortwave listeners. I'm Darren, VK6EK, and although there's been a change of the guard, we'll still endeavour to bring you the best AR news with a zero budget. Thanks very much to Bob, VK6POP, for arranging a well-attended huddle last Sunday evening, where we had a few but enough people put their hands up to continue with the news and take some of the heat off Bob, who will be taking a well-deserved rest. We hope to continue with the regular segments. We hope to also include more regular updates from clubs, contests, and parks on the air. Without further waffle, on with the news.
Over the past few years, there's been a drop in participation in contests, and there would likely be many explanations offered depending on the point of view of the teller of the story. Here in Western Australia, there has been a rumbling of disappointment with the Australian contest due to a lack of a level playing ground. Stations operating out of Western Australia, in the main, must work DX for the majority of their contacts, as the closest capital city to Perth is Adelaide at 2,500 kilometres. Compare that with the southeast corridor of Australia, where probably 80% of Australian amateurs are located within 1,000 kilometres of each other, many of them within 500 kilometres. It's easy for that 80% to use 40 metres most of the day and have no need to change bands. Because they have a lot of nearby, strong stations to work, they don't need to hear weaker stations from 2 to 3,000 kilometres away. Those amateurs in the east of Australia lucky enough to have a directional antenna only need to point at north or south to keep themselves busy all day. So hold those thoughts for a bit. I and others have spent considerable energy encouraging Western Australians to give the Aussie contests a try. Some love it, some don't. The ones that trouble me are those who say something like, "I enjoyed the idea of the contest, but I spent all day trying to reach station that I could hear clearly, but they don't reply to my call. So blow this for a lark. I'm not doing it again." And that was liberally translated from the vernacular. I and others have been suggesting to the contest managers that the introduction of multipliers will help level the playing field. And at last, we've had results. The new rules for the John Moyle Field Day were announced recently, and multipliers have been introduced. Multipliers can make your score grow rapidly when you put in the work to gather them. It works like this. The contest is divided into 8 3-hour blocks. Each new prefix counts as a multiplier per band, per mode, per block. So how many multipliers could you accumulate in a 3-hour block? Well, lots. There's VK0, VK1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Papa 2, ZL1, 2, 3, etc., and so on. Well, I've listed 14 there. So if you collect all of those in each block, each contact is worth 14 points. Then if you collect more for other modes, there you go. It runs off and you get a marvellous score. So the more work you're prepared to put in to chase prefixes, the better your score grows. This will force those who camp on 40 metres all day or 20 metres all day to change bands and work harder to collect the multipliers. That's a big thing for us here in the West. The other big thing is to get more West Aussies into the contests. The John Moyle Field Day is in March, so there's lots of time to think about it and plan for it. The most important thing you should do right now is to commit to doing it. Set the date aside, block out the calendar, and arrange the leave pass. I'll continue to harangue you from time to time about joining in the John Moyle and other contests that are coming up. And I'm no great contester myself. I'm just a mug who likes to have a go. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Did you know that on top of chasing DXCC awards, there's a number of other large global organisations with similar schemes but using islands, parks, lighthouses, CQ and ITU zones, etc. as the defining entity? Today I'm going to focus on the Islands on the Air program and some of my interaction with it. This is a brief description of IOTA taken directly from the IOTA website, word for word. IoT is an exciting and innovative activity program that has caught the interest of thousands of radio amateurs worldwide. Established in 1964, it promotes radio contacts with stations located on islands around the world to enrich the experience of all active on the amateur bands. And to do this, it draws on the widespread mystique surrounding islands. It is administered by Islands of the Air, IOTA Limited, called here IOTA Management, in partnership with the Radio Society of Great Britain. IOTA Management has grouped the Oceans Islands into some 1,200 IOTA groups with, for reasons of geography, varying numbers of counters, i.e. qualifying islands in each group, and has published the listings in the IOTA directory and on the IOTA website. The objective for the IOTA Island Chaser is to make radio contact with at least one counter in as many of these groups as possible, and for the IOTA Island Activator to provide such contacts. The program has a strong rule structure. IOTA management encourages friendly competition amongst chasers by publishing details of participants' performance in an honour roll and annual listings, as well as by recognising it with certificates and prestige awards. So, many of you will know that our region, called Oceania, basically the Pacific Ocean Islands, of which Australia is the largest, and is designated by IOTA as OC-001. Christmas Island is OC-002. Cocos-Keeling Islands is OC-003. Lord Howe Island is OC-004. And Norfolk Island is OC-005, and so on. WA has 13 island groups, not including the mainland. Many of our island groups have been activated over the years by groups such as NCRG, West Oz DX Group, MEL, VK6LC, Silent Key, and I'm sure many others. A few notable operations have included Rowley Shoals and Browse Island, both of which had international operators involved and significant logistics effort required. While some of our islands need Clipperton-like organisations to activate, many are as simple as zipping over to Rottnest, Garden or Wedge Islands, and everything in between. A fun medium intensity activation is Christmas and Cocos-Keeling Islands, both VK9 locations, so you get IOTA and DXCC chasers looking for you. Both lovely places to visit. Regular, reasonably priced flights to get there, and both have good options for accommodation. The cool thing about these activations are that there is a worldwide following of IOTA chasers, so if you do a bit of marketing before heading to one of these islands, you can experience what it's like to be the DX. This can be lots of fun and really does hone your operating skills, not to mention that a modest setup on an island 10 feet from the ocean is like having a kilowatt and a Yagi at 30 metres at home. For anyone who hasn't experienced this, picture walking into a pub with 200 people waiting for you, and each of them only wants to shake your hand, give you their name to write down, and get the hell out of the pub in the shortest amount of time possible. And some of them don't want to wait any longer than humanly possible, so that they all yell at you like you're in a stock exchange in the 70s. It's the most fun you can have with your clothes still on. My first conscious IOTA activation was in the Torres Strait in 2019. I've been working in the Torres Strait off and on for a couple of years on a public safety comms project. I'd always meant to take some radio gear across, but only got around to doing it towards the end of my time there. I had two nights on Porama, which is an island in the central Torres Strait island group, around 130 kilometres northeast of Thursday Island off the tip of Cape York. The island had a population of 167 according to the 2016 census, and about a third of the island is occupied by the light aircraft strip. I had my trusty old FT-857D, a borrowed Soda Beams dipole from Glen, 6PAW, and a squid pole. I threw the ends of the dipole over some trees close to the hut I was in, but only about 20 feet from the ocean on one side and a couple of 100 metres on the other side. It shouldn't have worked. It didn't on SSB, but I made about 150 contacts on FT-8 in the two nights I was there. I think one of my first contacts was to South America, which was a real treat being a VK6. I did the same for the next 3 to 4 nights on Thursday Island after the trip to Porama before returning to Perth. My biggest regret was not having taken it over on earlier trips. I worked on five other islands over the course of that project, and the effort I needed to go to for the activation was quite minimal. As far as I can tell, my activation of Porimer was the first known activation on a Torres Strait island outside of the main two islands, Thursday and Horn Islands. Same year ended up pretty busy, with a two-week trip to Christmas Island on the same project, using the same gear, and then a week on Cocos with a bunch of mates purely centred on ham radio and beer and fishing. And we had more gear on that one. So looking for a new challenge for your ham radio habit? Get some friends together, organise on your own to visit an island. Advertise it on IOTA and the DX news sites. Look for a good QSL manager. I've used David at EB7DX quite a few times, and he's pretty good. And have a shot. Thanks for listening. This has been VK6SJ, Steve Kennedy, with another episode of Did You Know? If you'd like a text copy of this or any other articles, they'll be posted to my blog page at comtechradio.com.au about 2 weeks after it's gone to air.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. Recently I explored the use of a radio device aptly described by a fellow Aussie electronics engineer Ozing as absolute witchcraft. I'm talking about an RF circulator, one of which is sitting quietly on my desk. Roughly 60 millimetres square, 30 millimetres thick, weighing in at just under half a kilogram, unexpectedly with a 200-year history. Let the spelunking commence. The moment you start reading the circulator Wikipedia page, you'll see this sentence, quote, "Microwave circulators rely on the anisotropic and non-reciprocal properties of magnetized microwave ferrite material," end quote, with a helpful reference to Modern Ferrites Volume 2, Emerging Technologies and Applications, a 416-page reference that promises to dig into the nitty-gritty, showing 55 hits for the word circulator. Anisotropic, you ask? It's a property that describes velvet. Rub it one way, it's smooth. Rub it the other way, and the hair stands up on the back of your neck. Wood is another example, easier to split along the grain than across it. While we're at it, reciprocity in physics is the principle that you can swap the input and output of a linear system and get the same result. If you know me at all, it should come as no surprise that I went looking for an inventor. There's over 12,000 patents referring to a circulator, including more than a handful relating to nuclear reactors. In 1960, a prolific Jesse L. Butler came up with patent US3255450A, multiple beam antenna system employing multiple directional couplers in the lead-in, which states, quote, "This circulator has the characteristic that energy into one port will leave another port to the exclusion of a third," end quote. If you recall, that's the exact phenomenon I used to describe the RF circulator on my desk. So, job done. We have our inventor. Not so fast. The patent goes on to say, quote, "Circulators of this type are discussed in an article, The Elements of Non-Reciprocal Microwave Devices, by C. Lester Hogan in Volume 44, October 1956, issue of Proceedings of the IRE, pages 1345 to 1368, end quote. The IRE is the Institute of Radio Engineers. I found a copy of that tome, thank you worldradiohistory.com, which includes the following sentence, quote, "Until a few years ago, all known linear passive electrical networks obeyed the theorem of reciprocity. Today, several different types of passive, non-reciprocal microwave networks are in practical use," end quote. A footnote refers to an article by Lord Rayleigh, On the Magnetic Rotation of Light and the Second Law of Thermodynamics, and includes images of an optical one-way transmission system from 1901. In that 1901 article, Lord Rayleigh in turn refers to a paper published 16 years earlier, in which he observed that light polarization can be made to violate the general optical law of reciprocity, using a system that consists of two so-called nickel prisms, a crystal that can convert ordinary light into plain polarized light, invented by William Nickel in 1828. Using two prisms arranged at a 45-degree angle, you can make light go through it in one way, but not the other. Lord Rayleigh, also known as John William Strutt, in a very sparse footnote states, quote, "that magnetic rotation may interfere with the law of reciprocity had already been suggested by Helmholtz," end quote. Further digging gets me to an 1856 publication of the, quote, "Handbuch der Physiologischen Optik," end quote, or the Handbook of the Study of How the Eye and Brain Work Together, where Helmholtz says that, translated from German, "according to Faraday's discovery, magnetism affects the position of the plane of polarization." This gets us to 1845, where Michael Faraday experimentally discovered that light and electromagnetism are related. His notebook has the following sentence, paragraph 7718, written on the 30th of September, 1845. Quote, "Still, I have at last succeeded in illuminating a magnetic curve or line of force and in magnetizing a ray of light," end quote. Today, we call that the Faraday effect. The best part? You can read Michael Faraday's diary right now and see the whole thing. So, who then invented the RF circulator? From mastodon to circulators to modern ferrites to non-reciprocal microwave devices to multiple beam antennas to magnetic rotation to optical reciprocity to nickel prisms to the Faraday effect, this is the perfect example of standing on the shoulders of giants. And the result sits as a little box on my desk. Just so you don't feel left out, your mobile phone likely has one of these devices on board. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
Greetings from the Northern Corridor Radio Group at Whiteman Park. It's been a little too long since we gave an article to News West, so I thought now would be a good time to do that as we approach the end of the year. Our big project this year has been the refurbishment of our two radio rooms, as well as some fairly major repairs on towers and antennas. The radio room upgrade started with the replacement of the carpets and chairs. Chairs in particular were well and truly in need of care, and we purchased chairs that are rated for 8+ hours of continuous use. Next step was to renew our antenna switching systems. 10 years ago, we were using exclusively monobanders on separate masts, and we could share all antennas between both rooms using a 6-pack switch. That was removed from service about 5 years ago when we moved to multiband antennas, and we then used dedicated antennas to each room, switched with the switching capability of our SPE amplifiers. Our next build moves us back to being able to share all antennas with both rooms, and with the ability to switch between multiband and monoband antennas, giving us best of both worlds. In addition to this, we've added more switches and high-power bandpass filters to the system to remove interference between the two rooms, something that's always been a compromise when we operate multi-multi during contests. To control the switching, we're using web relays and a Node-RED server as a user interface. The radios will also connect to the Node-RED server so the antennas can follow the selected band on the radios. We've also added Ethernet daughter boards to our Green Heron rotator controllers so that each rotator can be controlled from either room. On other fronts, we've beefed up the tower supporting our 40-metre, 4-element monoband Yagi, as well as carried out some remedial works on that antenna. We're currently replacing the rotator turning the ultra beam and have plans to add a rotator to our 20-metre monoband Yagi so it can face somewhere other than just east. The big plan is that we'll be ready for the autumn contest season next year and get back to featuring towards or at the top of the larger contests and maybe even break our Remembrance Day contest record again. Overall this year, the club's in a good place culture-wise. We have more than our fair share of doers, lots of concurrent projects. We have a remote station available for our members to access from home. We also have a growing number of members, which is rare for any ham radio club. So if you're looking for a vibrant and fun club to join, pop into our club station on any given Sunday morning around 8:30 a.m. at Whiteman Park off Nangara Road, just east of the Tonkin Highway exit and on the south side of Nangara Road. We'd love to welcome more members. Thank you.
Covering Western Australia and beyond, this is News West, brought to you by WA Amateur Radio News, on air, online and on demand. This is VK6 ARN and I'm Mark, VK4 MHQ.
The CQ Worldwide CW contest is in just under a week from today and it's the biggest CWDX contest in the world. It's quite easy to work 100 countries in the 48-hour period, especially from WA, where we, along with our Northern Territory siblings, have a huge advantage being in Zone 29. The contest uses CQ zones and DXCC entities, along with bands, as multipliers. Basically, your end score is made up of the total amount of contacts, multiplied by the amount of zones, multiplied by the amount of DXCC entities on each band. Too hard, I don't know Morse code, or I do know Morse code, but not good enough to do 30 words a minute in a contest environment, I hear you all say. Well, the CQ Worldwide is also one of the easiest CW contests. The exchange is your CQ zone. Pretty easy. Even if you don't quite copy the zone from the other guy, your logbook will most likely fill it in for you anyway. You do need to be able to copy your own call sign so you know when to respond. Sending Morse is also a handy skill, but many hams let their logging software or the radio send the Morse as well. If you're like me, managing a pile-up at 30 words a minute is not my thing. I tend to use the CQ Worldwide to give my DXCC and WIA leaderboard scores a shot in the arm, so I only call, i.e. search and pounce, never run a pile-up. Most operators are very happy to get a Zone 29 in their log, so even if you're a bit slow on the key, you'll still be appreciated very much by the other party. N1MM has a good CW keyer, and many ham rigs also have them. You really only need three responses: your call sign, 5NN29, and RRTU. Roger, roger, thank you. Pretty easy. Now I can hear the diehard CW aficionados crying, "That's not CW operating." True to an extent, I agree. However, a couple of things about this. There are a couple of DXs with DXCC on CW who probably couldn't have a rag chew or run a pile-up, but they're on CW regularly and that's a good thing. You can't get away from having to decode the other call sign and recognise your own call. Certainly for me anyway, my CW gets a little bit better after every contest. It means I'm better prepared for contests like my favourite one, the Remembrance Day contest, which is marginally harder. Another thing worth doing in the CQ Worldwide is just listening to some of the gun operators around. And we've got quite a few world-class CW operators here in WA, and you can learn a lot from them. So brush off your CW key or paddle, set up your logging program or radio up to give it a shot. It starts next Saturday morning on the 29th of November at 8 a.m. and runs to Monday morning at 0800. There's also QRP, low power, i.e. 100 watt, and single band categories that give the rookies amongst us half a chance of getting a certificate at the end.
WAG news for the 23rd of November. First up, congratulations to Darren and to the rest of the new News West roster of producers as VK6 Amateur Radio News continues and moves forward in coming months. The next WAG calendar entry begins on VK6 RLM and All Star Hubs at 10:30 local this morning, and yes, it is the WAG Technical and General Net. If you are listening in the evening, well, it's next week. Talking about next week, it is the pleasure of both WAG and the VHF group to organise the Christmas barbecue for VK6 at Wireless Hill this coming Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. to 1400, and to invite Wyson and everyone else to come along to kick off the forthcoming festive season. Now, of course, you can arrive earlier and even stay later. And if you would like to bring your family, they're all welcome. You may bring along your own food and drink, even bring a plate to share. Between all of us, the VHF group and WAG, we will be making sure that everyone has the best opportunity to get a snagger, a bun and a drink, we're all looking forward to catching up with you at one of the famous Wireless Hill Barbies this coming Saturday, the 29th. The next meeting of WAG is due for the 1st of December, but watch this space. Check the announcements on the WAG Reflector and find out what the goss is at the barbecue. It is going to be a long, hot summer, and we're maybe going to be seeing you in February. But that doesn't mean that there will be nothing happening at WAG this holiday season. There is plenty of busy bee stuff that we're hoping to make a really good dent into over the summer. There's the installation of the new 23cm repeater at Tick Hill, the work to convert VK6 RFM to YSX continues, and much, much more. 7-3s from WAG, and hope to catch you in person at the Christmas barbecue next Saturday from 10:30 a.m.
This week marks a new chapter in News West, with a new team taking up the challenge to produce News West, and with some clubs committing to contribute and even taking a turn to produce News West a few times a year. We owe a big thank you to Darren, Philip, Steve, Anthony, Mark and Mark for forming the team, with Eddie and myself providing background support. It's now up to us, all of us, to support the new News West team by providing material and tuning in and listening to News West on air, by download or podcast, and please hang around for callbacks. Rasa is in the process of putting QTC magazine together for the December edition, which is due to be published on the 14th of December. However, it could go earlier if it's ready. The final date for contributions is the 5th of December. How can you contribute? You could promote your club's activities, regular meetings and so forth, or if something irks you, write a letter to the editor, or a short story for the Pet Peeves page, photos and a short story about an activity that you attended, anything really that could be of interest to other people, because other people are interested. You just need to tell the story. Send your contributions and general inquiries by email to info@vkradioamateurs.org. The RASA website is vkradioamateurs.org, and that email address is info@vkradioamateurs.org. I'm Bob VK6POP.
This is VK6 News West from Perth, Western Australia, for the 23rd of November 2025. This is Roy with today's helpline for you today. We are looking for anyone who's interested in antennas. We've got a few here for you from Chris Walker, VK6 Delta Delta X-ray. He has the following: a 6-metre, 2-metre, 70-centimetre tri-band Yagi antenna. That's VHF through to UHF. Cushcraft model Alpha 627013 Sierra. Aluminium construction. Assembly in good condition, and with assembly instructions and operating instructions as well, asking $240. He also has a cobweb antenna, something like a quad, I guess. It's called a cobweb. It's an MFJ model 1836 Hotel, assembled in good condition with instruction manual. Covers frequencies from 6, 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meter band. It's a cobweb antenna, otherwise known as an MFJ 1836 Hotel, and comes with instruction manual. $190 for that one. Contact Chris, VK6 Delta Delta X-ray, on telephone 0410 027 020. 0410 027 020. A lot of zeros in there for you. But that's all I have for you for today. Thank you once again, and I hope that Helpline keeps going a little bit longer, depending on what happens with VK6 News. This is Roy, VK6 X-ray Victor, and my email address for any further correspondence is vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. vk6xrayvictor@bigpuddle.com. Big Pond, if you prefer. Cheers, 7-3.
There's nothing like a threat of closure to bring out the punters, and this week is a case in point with a full program. Thank you to Steve Kennedy for providing most of the content this week, to Bob for his patience, the new ARN team, regular and irregular contributors, the broadcasters, and you for listening. You can provide positive feedback or contributions to the email address newswest@vk6.net. NewsWest can be heard on air on the published day or from the vk6.net website or your favourite podcast player. Please stand by for callbacks or register your callback at vk6.net. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN.